Hello and welcome to Just Get a Real Job podcast. I'm of course your host, Jamie McKinley, and thank you as always for listening. Thank you for tuning in. I'm recording this week's intro a few days earlier than usual in an attempt to be more organised. Running this podcast is very, very enjoyable and I absolutely love doing it, but it bloody hell, it's time consuming and often I feel like I'm chasing my tail. So it's nice to do this a couple of days earlier than usual and hopefully Elliot appreciates it as well. So there you go, Elliot. Don't say I'm not good to you. For anyone that's not listened to this podcast before, 132 episodes in, just a reminder that this podcast is basically an attempt to demystify the creative industries. I basically interview people working in different parts of the creative industry and have quite honest conversations about their career paths, their pathways, and the ins and outs of their work, etc., the good and the bad. So yeah, it's an attempt to demystify the creative industries. We've got another really interesting conversation in store for you this week, and we are joined by writer and performer Josie White. And it was really interesting to chat to Josie. She has just started her tour of her show Rotten, which is on in quite a few places across the UK, and there's a link to that in the show notes. We get more into it in today's episode as well. It was really interesting to chat to Josie. We spoke about the sort of fear and difficulties of leaving a creative degree and not really knowing what to do with yourself. She spoke about the writing process and getting this show off the ground. She spoke about the importance of new writing and how important it is to have new writing in different parts of the UK, especially in the East Midlands where she is from. I also really appreciate the fact that Josie was quite calm and measured throughout this interview because we had some technical issues with Wi-Fi and things and there was a little bit of a delay and I know that's tricky to do an interview with, so, and Josie was really patient throughout and we still had a very interesting conversation which I very much enjoyed. But be sure to check out Rotten, links to that again in the show notes, and I hope you enjoy this week's conversation with Josie White. Creative industries are merely mess, artists lie their goods are torn to shreds. The government will spoil your hopes and dreams by offering a useless retraining scheme. There's such amazing talent, why can't you see that the government has decimated the industry? And now the years of hard work could be thrown away. And people who don't care, well, they will say, just get a real job. Josie, good evening. Lovely to meet you. How are you getting on?
Hi, lovely to meet you too. Yeah, I'm good, thanks.
I know it's always that weird thing when you do a podcast, you speak a little bit off air and then suddenly you just jump into it and have to start into like podcast mode. It always feels slightly unnatural.
And I just get really like awkward. I get very awkward and I'm like, oh no.
Well, yeah. We've got lots of interesting things to talk about tonight. Your play Rotten, which is a piece of new writing as well. I mean, you're about to go on like a bit of a UK tour with that. I know that starts tomorrow. When people are listening to this, that'll be on in the midst of the tour when it comes out. But do you just want to sort of start by introducing yourself to our listeners? Tell us a bit about you.
Yeah, so my name's Josie White. I'm from Nottingham, born and raised. I trained at drama school. So I went to acting school and then I got into writing. And I've been really loving this project. It's kind of been a work in progress. I started being mentored by Ricky Beadle Blair, the amazing Ricky Beadle Blair, in lockdown during the various pandemics. And I managed to get like a first draft out, just kind of going back and forth. It was my first project. And I kind of got some friends together during lockdown and we'd have Zoom meetings. Not together, but, you know, virtually. And we'd have Zoom meetings and they would read the latest draft of the script. And then I would go away, do rewrites, and then it would, you know, go back and forth, really. So I actually really appreciated that time to just concentrate on writing. It was just kind of just my main focus. And I managed to get a good amount of the scripts done. And then we applied for Arts Council England funding for an R&D, which was great. And I got loads of support from Derby Theatre. And then we met our producers, our co-producers, Emerson and Ward, and they took the project on very kindly. And yeah, we're here now. We're about to go on tour. And our R&D was about a year ago, this time last year. So like looking back then, it's really amazing to see how far the project's come.
No, it's very exciting. And obviously, as I've seen at the start, like it's that kicks off tomorrow. But there's lots of other things that interesting things to talk to you about as well. And I know there's some other schemes that come with that are going along with the play for people to apply to. And I know, you're very passionate about various themes in your work and things. So there's lots of interesting stuff for us to talk about. But to begin, I'm sort of going to get to cast your mind back to your sort of earliest creative influences. Do you remember as a youngster always being interested in writing, acting, like that sort of thing, or did that come later?
Yeah, no, I've always been interested in it. My mum was a dancer and then she started teaching drama at secondary school. So my dad's family as well were always very into theatre, and I was privileged enough to be taken along to theatre. And it was the murder mysteries that were very popular with everyone in the family. So we would go to the Agatha Christie's, the adaptations of Hitchcock, and I was shown the Hitchcock films very young. So yeah, I've always been into kind of thriller, and I've always like really looking forward to seeing that kind of stuff. And then I kind of realized that I hadn't really seen a lot of thriller around, like modern thriller, and especially thriller for young people. I just really haven't seen that. So that's kind of where kind of Rotten came from, this want to entertain young people, but also to engage them with like the fast pace of thriller, because I feel like thriller is really engaging, it's really shocking. And then this new kind of genre of dark comedy thriller has kind of come out, and we've seen it a lot in TV. I feel like Killing Eve was very much like dark comedy vibe, and so is like Mike Flanagan's work, like Midnight Mass, that works and stuff. And I really did think, well, I haven't really seen that happen in theatre yet, so I really wanted to kind of take that into theatre, and I hope that this does that. But yeah, I kind of used to write little stories as a kid, and I was always in like drama clubs and stuff. And yeah, it was very, very funny time. I was at like a little kids club, and I think my grandparents have like a video of me like dancing on the stage in this like opening number. We used to do variety shows, and I went off the wrong way and did something completely wrong. So the family always laugh at me about that. But yeah, that's my earliest memory, doing the wrong thing on stage, pretty much.
I think a lot of people listening will be able to relate to that as well. And the sort of other part of this question, which I think really ties in, is about where you're from. And I know there is quite seemingly from reading about you and doing some research that you do have quite a strong sense of identity and place. But it's about how where you're from sort of influenced you as a creative. And you were saying before that like you're from Nottingham and like a lot of your work is sort of based around in the Midlands and you do a lot to like work with people and creatives in that area. So how has that sort of affected you as a creative person?
I feel like it's definitely influenced the stories I tell and mostly like the characters I create. I feel like so far, like all of my work has had quite a few Midlands characters in it, especially East Midlands, like Nottingham, Derby, Leicester. I just feel like as someone from here, like we don't seem to fit in the South or in the North. We're just kind of like this little bubble in the middle of the country. And I feel like we do have a lot of people from here do have a lot of identity. A lot of stuff has happened here. Nottingham City Council has just become bankrupt. So there's this whole thing about they've cut a lot of funding to the arts, and that's happened quite recently. So that's been quite a big shock for creatives here. And an amazing company closed its gates at the beginning of the year, a place that like very much fringe theatre called Nonesuch. They're still going, thank God. They've just relocated, but their building, which was they were just so lovely and welcoming in that building, and they couldn't do enough for you. So yeah, it's kind of been it, we're kind of being hit left, right, and centre with things being cut and things stopping and things ending. So it's a kind of a weird time where people are still trying to create work and art here, but it's a real kind of struggle. So I really hope that new writing about the East Midlands and from people in the East Midlands can still be created, and that there are still groups and schemes and stuff. I think that's part of the reason why I wanted to really incorporate a strong outreach onto this project. And I think Ricky really started that off for me. From working with him as an actor, he always had people shadowing him. It was like an open door policy. People could come in and learn from him and watch how he works. And I think during this project and the R&D, we were really desperate to be able to pay people, because it's just such a difficult time, like with the economy the way it is, and people can't always afford to take a day off work to go shadow and then travel and everything. So being able to pay people for these schemes, like director shadow schemes and our rapid response writers schemes, which are really exciting, and then also having free workshops as well.
No, I think it's so important, the outreach thing, and to be interviewing so many different people from across the UK and other parts of the world as well. But like, it is such a difficult time for the creative industries, and like, I think across the board, local creative initiatives and things have been hit left, right, and centre. It's r really rough out there. And unfortunately, when the economy shrinks or there's problems there, like the arts seem to be one of the first things to get cut by local councils for whatever
Always.
reasons, or get cut in education and things. And it is a real shame. And you know, it's good that you're still trying to do things like that through, you know, this scheme, because I think any outreach is really vital and important. And it's also interesting you were saying about the sort of East Midlands. Like, I mean, I'm based up in Scotland, and like I maybe don't know like loads and loads about what's happening in England, but like you are right. Like, I do feel like that's an area that you don't maybe see represented on screen as much as other areas, or you don't hear about as much. So, you
Yeah.
know, I've not had many guests from that area on either. So it is interesting to hear about.
We do have like a strong his like a very strong history. I mean, we had in Nottingham especially, we had a lot in like Derby and stuff. We had a lot of pits and a lot of pit closures, and a lot of the communities, the more rural communities, are still really struggling from pit closures. The area that I live in was an old mining community, and yeah, it's some areas are still really struggling. And like with jobs and stuff as well. But we also get like a lot of like my family are Londoners who kind of moved out of London to the Midlands. So you get a lot of Southerners kind of moving up as well. But yeah, it does have a like a strong history. It's not just like Robin Hood.
I feel like, to be in all honesty, that's one of the only things I really know about
Yeah,
Nottingham,
that's what I tell people. Yeah, when
must be a common one you get.
oh, you go to America or something, and people are like, "Oh, where are you from?" Like, obviously, very nice and friendly. And you try and explain, you go, "I'm from Nottingham, you know, Robin Hood." And they're like, "Oh, yeah, I know that place." So, yeah, but we've literally, the castle has just opened again. So we didn't, the castle was shut for like 4 years. So we had no tourism. We had no Robin Hood shops or anything. It was just, yeah.
Well, no, the stuff you were saying about Nottingham and stuff is really interesting. When you were growing up, was there like a lot of culture around, and did you have a lot of access to the arts?
I wouldn't say that there was definitely more, but there wasn't loads. We do have a big Caribbean community here when I was growing up as well. So we always have the Caribbean Carnival every year, which is really nice, which just kind of engages the whole of Nottingham. And we have, I mean, it's not really arts, but I'm just thinking of like fun stuff to do as well, like engaging stuff. We have like a fair that comes every year. It's called Goose Fair. It's like a big deal. It is a big deal in the country. Goose Fair is amazing. It's huge. I always take friends from out of town and they're just like completely shocked by it. But Galleries of Justice as well. I feel like there's like an arts quarter in Nottingham where the Galleries of Justice are, and it was the old courtrooms, and it employs a lot of actors. So we have that kind of engagement, and there are art galleries. They're getting kind of smaller and smaller, but we have Television Workshop, which is an amazing, amazing kind of drama group for young people. I know a lot of people that have gone through there. And Nottingham Playhouse also does a lot of participation, but so does Derby and Leicester. So, like Derby Theatre and Curve, who are partners on this project as well. Just by Curve having this new writing festival that we're about to open tomorrow, it's such a huge, huge deal. And they've put so much into this new writing festival, which is so lovely to see because they are a huge theatre and they've just put so much work into advertising this and these workshops and opportunities and really trying to engage people. So that is also bringing in a good audience.
Amazing. No, it's really important. And, you know, as you say, having even access to these things a little bit growing up and stuff can make such a big difference to people's, you know, life attainment. Even if they don't go into an arts career, like, you know, still relevant, and it can still help your education and things. The
Definitely.
other sort of question I want to ask, which I love asking people, but do you have a favorite word or phrase from where you grew up?
Yeah, there's quite a few. My favorite is Mardy. So Mardy is like, you'd be like, "Oh, I'm so Mardy today. Like, why are you always this Mardy?" And it's like moody. It's like, yeah, kind of being moody, but it's I don't know how to explain it. It's
It's
like
like, I think a lot of some, yeah,
moody.
might be familiar with it because of the Arctic Monkeys song. Like, you know, Mardy Bum, of course. Like, there's, you know, that's, I
Oh
think, this probably got some like cultural clout from that. That's how I know the word.
I thought it was like a Nottingham. I really thought it was like a Nottingham thing. But where's he
Well,
from? He's not
the Arctic
from.
Monkeys are from Sheffield, but the thing is with language, and this comes up all the time, because I interviewed people a few weeks ago, and the word scran, they said like they thought that was a Liverpudlian phrase, and I always thought that was Scottish because I used the word scran to describe food. But words travel, and we never really know where they're from, so I think they can still have a sense of place, and then you're like, oh,
Yeah, and
interesting.
people like put claim to them. Yeah, Nottingham's definitely put claim to the word Mardy. So yeah,
But maybe
there's
Alex
nothing.
Turner was visiting Nottingham, and that's where he got the word. Who knows?
That's what I like to think.
Yeah, there you
I
go. You
like to think he
can.
was just passing through and heard it and thought, oh, I'll steal that.
Yeah, no, it could well have happened. I'm interested as well to sort of you mentioned earlier you were at drama school and stuff. So, what were your sort of first steps then? When you like were you drama school? Were you always interested in writing still then, or were you sort of like I'm going to become an actor, or was it still kind of like just see what happened to that point?
I was always interested in writing because I really loved like analyzing scripts and language, and that's where I really got into that. And I think that I definitely concentrated like exclusively pretty much on acting when I got out. But then I worked with Ricky on his play Gutted, and I've never read a play like that. I've never been a part of something like that. It was about people where he was from in Bermondsey in London. And it was just so raw and exciting and about like people that you really feel like you got to know. And I just kind of got me thinking about, oh, I'd love to be able to write something about, but like characters about where I'm from and have the similar experiences to like what I had growing up and stuff like that. So it was really that play that was an inspiration, even though it was, you know, Ricky's from London and it's set in London. It really got me thinking about that people might want to hear different stories about where, I guess, I'm from in other places of the country, if that makes any sense. Just
No,
finish that,
of
if that
course,
made sense.
no, of course. I think seeing anything like that on screen, on stage, in music, like I think it resonates so much, especially when you're younger. Have you ever heard of that portal theory thing before?
No.
It's like this idea that between I think I might make this a slight mistake with this, so this might not be 100% the theory because I read this a long time ago. I actually think it might have been Mark Kermode I heard this talk about this, but the idea is I think it's between certain age, I think it's between 18 and 23, that when you see something that resonates with you, you're more likely to take it in and resonate with it more than any other point in your life. So you take it as almost like, so it has like a huge effect on you and influences you, especially if you're a creative person. But I think it's sort of, I feel like I've really effed up this
No, it
explanation, but it's
sounds,
very
no,
interesting.
yeah, it does sound really interesting because thinking about it, I was that kind, around that kind of age when I was working, first worked with Ricky on Gutted, and when I first had the idea for Rotten as well, it was kind of like living in London after drama school and kind of really finding it like difficult, I think. I think I found that more difficult than being in drama school. It was because you're in like a bubble when you're there, but when you're out and you're in London, it can be a lonely place. It's so fast paced, nothing ever, and it can be quite cold. It can be the best place to live on earth, but when you're struggling or you're in a dark place, it can be the worst place to be.
Yeah, no, I love going to London. I think it's such a vibrant place, but I think I'd struggle to live there. I'm not saying I never will, but like I feel you're right. Yeah, I think it does have a coldness to it. Like my sort of protest in London is I always shout thank you to the bus driver whenever I visit there. As like a sort of, that's my little Scottish protest of like, come on, guys. So I could imagine it would be quite a hard place to be when you just graduate. And graduate, I think that's the weird, one of the weirdest places you could ever be in your life is when you first graduate. Even I think both times I graduated, first from when I did an undergrad, then a master's, like both times I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, this is such a strange place to be in. And you know, I can imagine why seeing something around that time would be so impactful.
Yeah, you really are in a bubble. It's very difficult. Like I very much understand why people stay and try and study and learn as much as they can and be in those environments of learning because they are really important times in kind of coming out of that environment. It's very easy to just kind of to lose your faith and your passion, I think. And I think that's what this, I feel like Rotten is about as well. Like people who are just surviving, not living, and are very depressed and angry and wanting a better life, you know.
Which is very universal, especially at the moment in like a cost of living crisis and at a time where it feels like a lot of people are just surviving and they feel like they're just scraping by. And I think the other thing on this is that I think especially in a creative career or doing a creative course, like there isn't that pathway when you come out of university for a lot of people. So it is like, what the hell do I do now? Because you end up usually working a job to sort of get by and you still have that, I really want to make it doing, you know, whatever it might be, acting, writing, you know, working on a TV show or something, where it's not like a common thing where you can just go and do that. And when you're at uni university doing a course that's maybe creative, you are in that bubble and you do feel like, oh, everyone else around me is doing this. And then suddenly that's pulled from under you. So there is a problem. And I guess speaking of pathways, a question I quite like to ask as we going to start chatting a bit more about Rotten is like, how did you sort of get this piece of new writing off the ground? Like, because a lot of people listening might have an idea for a play, or they might be working on some form of writing, and they're like, how, you know, so how do you go, did you go about sort of getting that to where it is now, which is, you know, about to go on a tour?
I had a really great mentor. Ricky was so kind in taking me under his wing and mentoring me through writing. I really think that you have to have such a self-motivation. Is that the right word? Like being self-motivated, because to, as you say, do a full-time job, you know, work in a bar or something, or a teaching assistant or something like that, and then come home and write is so, so difficult. Because you're so tired from trying to like make a living that it gets so difficult to do what you're passionate about. But there really are some great workshops and talks and stuff about that. Trying to find that little piece of inspiration where you can, I think, and still trying to go to the theatre if you can, still trying to watch different things, keeping your finger to the pulse. I think the news can be a really, really dark place and you can get really down listening to it. But I really think as a writer, it's so important to know what's going on in the world. So I think that's really important. So yeah, self-motivation, having a plan for your script, planning out scene by scene, understanding what funding pathways are available. I think Arts Council England is the biggest one, or there's Arts Council Scotland and there's Arts Council Wales as well. And trying to, you know, and trying to get people to read your work, I feel like if you have like even friends or family that are just willing to like to read it for you, hearing that, you can immediately see what changes you kind of need to make. And yeah, I think keeping your finger to the pulse is really, really important. The script, you're not going to do a first draft and then it's going to be amazing. It's not going to be, you know, an Olivier nomination worthy kind of script in the first draft. You're gonna have to keep going and going, and people sometimes take like 10 drafts to do stuff. And even now, we're about to go on tomorrow, and today I thought, oh, I don't like this speech, I'm gonna change this. And Mickey was like, no, don't do it. And he was like really don't. And I was like, I'm just gonna have a little play with it, see what I think. And the actors were like, I was like, oh, I've got something new for you. And you could see like the look of like, oh god. But we read it out and we ended up thinking it was all right and put it in, and it kind of felt better. So things change up until
I think that's one of the interesting things about theatre, is that you can, as the tour goes on, or the shows go on, you can sort of, they can change almost every night slightly a little bit. And I think that's quite interesting.
Yeah,
you don't have in other mediums as much. Although saying that, when, you know, working in TV and stuff, like, we'll be doing amends on the floor, like, sometimes an hour before you're about to shoot, you're like, oh, we're gonna, whatever reason, the location's changed or something. And it's like, so it happens a little bit there, but it's different. It's like, you know, in theatre, you can have that a little bit of freedom there, which is interesting.
Yeah, as a, like an actor myself, I do kind of feel for them when I change stuff or go, nah. But yeah, I feel like the cast that we've got a really open and lovely, and we've got an amazing director who is also really open to my suggestions. So I felt in a position where I could go, well, I think this could be better and change it. And we'll see if it is better. But I think you've just got to be, I think when you, with new writing, you've just got to keep your finger to the pulse, I think. And you've got to be compassionate, I think, is a skill that you've, as a writer, you should have. You have to be compassionate towards people, because you should really love your characters. I mean, even if they're doing awful kind of stuff, you just kind of, you love them in a weird way. It's not like you agree with what they're doing, but you just love them because you've kind of created them. And I think that for like a diverse, well-rounded character, it kind of comes from a place of compassion, because people don't have one side to them. People have multiple sides, and then you kind of chip away and you understand where certain traits have come from.
Completely, and it's the nuance of that that makes it so interesting and draws us all to the best characters we like see. The other thing I wanted to quickly roll back on before we go on to talk about Rotten in a bit more detail is, like, you were mentioning how important having a mentor has been for you, but like, for anyone listening, like, how could people maybe go about something like that? Like, what would you recommend for people listening?
I think sending that email, I think, is so important. And I think people kind of know what I mean by that email. feel. It's like approaching that artistic director that you feel what you feel really scared to approach because you're like, who am I? And they've got such a high pressure job, and they may not respond, and blah blah blah. And it's the fear.
Yeah, completely.
It's the fear. It's the imposter syndrome. It's not feeling like you're good enough. But sending that email and reaching out to people, I think, is it just amazing, and having to keep doing that because people will respond. People will have that 10-minute Zoom meeting with you or read your script or something like that. And then you've built that connection. It's really important for like writers, I think, to get in with their local theatres, especially if you're regional, and spend that time making those connections with the people that work there, seeing what they have on, going to their workshops, basically just kind of like incorporating yourself into that theatre community is really important when you are a regional writer, because then you get to know everyone, and you get to see what kind of work they have there, and people might be willing to have a meeting with you or read your stuff. And I think that's kind of what I did. I emailed Sarah Brigham, who's the artistic director of Derby Theatre, I think about a year and a bit ago. Just kind of, I applied for something, didn't get it, but she was really lovely and said, we really want to keep in touch. This isn't the end. So I kind of emailed her talking about Rotten, actually. And she was like, yeah, let's have a quick meeting. Let's have a quick Zoom meeting on this date. I was like, whoa, like that was really. And I was really, really pleased about that. And from there, she was just so generous and was like, yes, we can help you with this. I'll put you in touch with these people. And it's been a really great relationship with like herself and Derby Theatre since then. Since kind of sending her that email, you never know what's going to happen.
Completely. And I think it's about sending the right email as well. And I think
That's
a lot of people
true.
are scared. And if anyone's interested in, and we actually had a conversation a few weeks ago on the podcast with an actor called Sarah Cameron West, and we went into for about 5 minutes, like how to send the right email. And it's a really, so I'll encourage anyone
Great.
listening to go and listen to that. So it was some interesting takeaways from her. So just so we don't have to go into too much detail on it, because there's so much more I want to talk to you about in the time we've got. But I think the other thing as well, as you're right, I think that there is that imposter syndrome about sending the email. And even now, at the point in my career I'm in, when it comes to this podcast, I still 132 episodes in, I'm like, I'm still, oh, I don't really want to bother that person. And it's very natural. So I think anyone listening, like, that's a very natural thing to have. But the majority of the time, I actually think most people are really interested in helping and will get back to you. So.
Yeah, especially. And don't feel like, I'm not saying go out there and like send someone an email every day, but I'm saying like it's okay to be a bit persistent and, send an email, maybe leave it 2 weeks or something, and just send a little follow-up email, because people get really, really busy. The arts and theatres especially are very understaffed, and these people have so much on their plate. So you think about the amount of emails you'll get in a day and like just completely quadruple it. They're getting so many emails about so many different things. So sometimes it does take them a while to get back to you, or they may like think, okay, I'll reply to that in a minute and not get around to it because something comes up. So I think, yeah, being a bit persistent is good.
Yeah, it's all about balance, and like there's obviously ways of following up and stuff as well. And but I think most people listening will know, that they're not just gonna email and go, why, you ignored me and you didn't give it like my last email, etc. There's obviously just way, so I don't need to they go into too much detail about it. But I mean, let's talk about Rotten as well, because I mean, I'm sure there's lots more for you to say. And someone else I was reading an interview you did earlier in the year was about how like there's usually three core themes to your work, like mental health, working class, representing that, and also like representing like LGBT plus issues and things like that as well.
Yeah, definitely. And voices of women of color as well, and shining a spotlight on their voices. And I feel like Rotten really does incorporate all of those themes and all of the things I'm kind of passionate about. You have four very work, well, not four, okay, three of the characters in it are working class, and they are kind of, they're all of the characters are struggling with their mental health as well because of the fact that they thought that they'd leave drama school. So basically, it's about like three girls who have left drama school, and they are living in a flat in London in a council estate. And the electric's been turned off, then there's no more Netflix, and they get their kind of entertainment by spying on their rich neighbour who lives in the posh block of flats opposite, who is an earl's daughter, who is an Instagram celebrity, who has the life that they want, and they get very involved in her life very, very quickly, and then they catch her in a very compromising position, and their principles and morals go out the window because they pursue blackmailing her, and then it all goes really badly wrong. So yeah, it talks about different themes, and I think mental health is a big theme because these characters are really struggling. You can just tell by the way that they're living, the fact that they're not taking care of themselves. They're very bitter and angry, understandably angry, but they can't really seem to see a way out of it, and they're slipping into really bad habits. But yeah, I do want to explore the mental health and being at LGBTQIA plus and being a woman of color more in my future works as well.
It was really interesting, and also I guess like how do you actually feel the industry is at the moment from your perspective on like representation and those voices being represented? Because I mean we're speaking to people, it does seemingly, you know, there is a lot more of that in popular culture, but there's obviously still a way to go on it. So how do you feel about that from your perspective? I'm always interested to ask.
Yeah, I think that there is such a long way to go with it, and I think it's making things accessible as well. Like sometimes you look at opportunities, you find opportunities on the theatre website or on Twitter or whatever, and you just kind of think that these aren't, they're asking for so many different things. Like for someone who is a new writer and perhaps doesn't have like the credits or whatever, and they're asking for so much, for you to have so much experience. And I'm seeing less stuff for like really just starting out. And I just think that hearing different voices in the industry, it's changing, but it's I'm not hearing the voices that I'd like to hear as much as I'd like to hear them in the industry. And I think that's shifting. And I think the new work that I'm seeing and the new work that I want to create and some of my friends are creating, it's going in a really a positive direction, but it's really kind of hard. Like it's kind of difficult keeping going when you feel like you're not being represented sometimes in various ways or various channels and stuff. So yeah, I think it's a hard time, but I'm really positive that things are going to get a lot better, and that, you know, the arts is going to get a bit more money into it, and then we can, you know, support new voices.
No, I really do hope so. I think often these things do swing in roundabouts, and we do go through phases where there's really hard times, and then think, you know, funding models and things do, you know, improve. But, you know, it is a really hard time, and I think particularly across sort of creative industries, and I think from my perspective, being so close to the sort of TV industry at the moment, that's really on its knees, and there's so many people out of work, and there's so many people that are changing careers, and it is really hard to like keep going and to sort of stay positive. So it's good that you still have some positivity about it, because we do need people like you to keep that, you know, fire burning and keep pushing on,
Yeah.
and it's a lot. There's a lot of pressure there, so I totally understand that. But you also want to tell us about like when the show's on and like where people can see it. I mean, there'll be links underneath the podcast, but for anyone listening that's in those areas, you know, they should get along and go and see the show.
Yeah, so it's going on kind of like it's going on a regional kind of tour. So it's going to starting at Curve tomorrow. So it's on there tomorrow and Saturday. And then it's going to Derby Theatre, and then it's going to Norwich Theatre Royal. It's going to the Stephen Joseph's Theatre in Scarborough, the Harrogate Theatre. It's going to Duke's Theatre for 2 nights as well. And it's going to go to Nottingham Playhouse. And I really hope I've not missed
Well, if you have, though, there's
anything.
links in the show notes, so people can just click on it and they can have a look in the
Yeah.
local area. And are those like sort of schemes still open for? I know there was like a shadow scheme for directors, I believe, and then there was a writers thing as well.
Yeah, Rapid Response Writer Scheme. So those schemes for this side of for this tour have ended. But I've just been so impressed. I was reading the scripts with our director, Ricky, and Rob, our producer, who's also an amazing writer. I was so impressed with the amazing responses that we got. And also, like, the writers that are on the schemes, like, how just great they were. And I was like, how are these people not, like, writing for this theater and that theater? And I was quite jealous of their writing, because they really, like, within, we had, like, yeah, it was. We had, like a launch workshop. And then they went away, and 2 days later, they had these amazing responses. And I was like, I couldn't do that. So I think that just kind of made it ring for me, was like, this is why we're doing this scheme. It's to get these writers seen more and at theatres, so theatres can see the amazing work that is happening around them. But we're hoping to go on tour again in the autumn, fingers crossed, and these schemes will be back So hopefully in the autumn, we will have more opportunities for rapid response writers and more director shadow opportunities as well. So yeah, they will come back, I'm hoping.
Is there like a theatre company that, what's the name of this sort of company that's running all these schemes and things as well, just so I can link it and...
So it is Emerson and Ward Productions, along with myself and Team Angelica. And the schemes are in association with Derby Theatre and Curve Theatre.
Right, that sums up perfectly. So people just go there and they'll be able to find a bit more information about that later in the year as well. The other thing I wanted to touch on with you, Josie, is about, and we were kind of talking about it there as well, and how sort of it is hard to keep positive and to keep faith in things at the moment. But how do you sort of go about protecting your mental health in this sort of crazy industry that we're part of?
I think it is really, really difficult. It's something that I think I do battle with, trying to stay in like good mental health. I think that it's really important to have hobbies and things you like to do that have nothing to do with this industry, whether it's like, I don't know, knitting or going to the gym or, you know, traveling or something that's just has nothing to do with this industry. I think having friends and family that aren't in this industry as well is really important, because you can tell them about it and how excited you are about certain stuff. But I feel like they really, for me, they just kind of give you a lot of perspective. I have, you know, friends and family that are in teaching and working for like councils and stuff like that. And I hear about their jobs and stuff, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like it's a really different perspective. I think that's really important. But also trying to reach out and get some help if you need it. It's not, I try and say nothing's like worth kind of, nothing is worth taking a bad hit on your mental health for. It's the most important thing that you have to try and protect. And I say it and it's quite hypocritical, because sometimes I'm like, I just kind of put it to one side and ignore it and just kind of keep going. But I really do feel that it's good to speak about these things. And I think talking to people as well, I definitely think counselling is great. Just having that outside view, that kind of, what is it called?
An external ex
Unbiased?
an unbiased like view. Yeah, that's true. I think it is nice having like someone who doesn't really know you, like, you know, be able to sort of see things, because it is an unjudgmental as well.
Yeah, totally. But again, like our mental health services are on their knees, and it's really, really difficult to get free mental health
Completely.
support. So I try and do like a manifestation and a bit of meditation when I can. And yeah, that kind of helps. It helps me. I started reading this book la end of last year, and I think that really helped me, like a little manifestation book. And it kind of had like really good practices and stuff that are healthy, and getting fresh air. I think fresh air is really, really important. When you're like working from home, a lot of creatives work from home, and you're just kind of stuck in an office or your room or whatever. And I think it's really important to just kind of go for a walk.
Just being in nature is just so important for, I think, all of us really, because we, you know, we evolved that way. So
Yeah, no, I totally, totally agree. Generally have better mental health, I think, if you spend more time outside.
completely, and you just feel better. I feel like I always feel better for it every time I go outside. But you know, I think what you're saying as well is like it is hard when it, you know, it's easy to say a lot of these things, but often we always put our own mental health aside, especially when you're in such a full-on industry and you're constantly trying to make graft and make things work for you. It's really hard, and I think, you know, unfortunately there isn't the infrastructure within the sector either to support people enough. So I think it's really important just to talk about it, and it's something I make a sort of point of asking everyone I have on the podcast now, because I think just normalizing the conversation around it is a lot of the battle as well.
Totally, totally. And I'm seeing projects have wellness consultants on their projects more now. And I think they're a great thing. And I think if people can have wellness consultants, just to kind of check in with people, especially if you're doing a project that has kind of surrounds difficult themes, sorry, discusses difficult themes, I think that's really important. Kind of embedding, yeah, wellness into any kind of project, because projects are so stressful. People don't sleep, people are away from home, you know, people are traveling a lot. So it's important to take care of people.
Completely. And just also allow that time for people to recover and, you know, have that some balance in their life, so they're not constantly working and traveling. It's, you know, it's having that awareness as well.
Yes, yeah, totally.
I've only got a few more questions. I'll start to wrap things up because I know we've been speaking for nearly an hour. One thing I wanted to quickly ask you is about, like, obviously you studied drama school and you sort of were an actor as well. Were you ever tempted to be in Rotten, or did you always want to sort of remain as just the writer?
I was never tempted to be in Rotten. Like, and I know that sounds really weird, like someone who is an actor and is trained and everything, but I think I knew that I wanted not to be a part of it in that way. I really wanted to concentrate on the creative side of it. So yeah, I don't know why I wasn't tempted because I really love these characters. And one of the actors was ill, I think, last week, and for a day, bless him. And I kind of stepped into their role, and I really, really enjoyed it. And then I was like, why aren't I doing this? Sorry, just so really tired.
Sure, me
Why
too.
aren't I doing this more? But then I kind of realized it's because I could not be co-producing, writing, and being in this. It would just be, or it would be really bad, and I wouldn't enjoy the process. And so I think that's why.
I think it's good to have that self-awareness though, and I think that's I think that's quite brave as well, because I think a lot of people would be tempted and feel that pressure. So I think that's really interesting that you sort of were aware of that. And obviously it's a great thing, because by the sounds of it, it's a really good show and you've been able to have more time to sort of put towards the creative process.
I definitely think so. I know I wanted to have more of an objective view. I wanted to be able to really look at everything and really kind of look at everything. And when you're on stage, it's really difficult. You're kind of in that bubble, so you don't have the energy or the time really to kind of think about anything
Well, it
else.
definitely makes a lot of sense. I've got some quick fire questions for you as well. These ones are just a bit more fun. So obviously you don't have to be super
Okay.
quick. You might have to think for a sec, but sort of a bit shorter. But the first one
Okay.
is biggest influence on your work as a writer slash actor.
I think Ricky Beadle Blair has been a massive influence on my work. And I think that I'm really into thrillers. So, and I've read loads of Agatha Christie and kind of watched a lot of Hitchcock and stuff. So those two, even though they're very different, even though the three artists are really, really different, they've been massive influences on my work.
I think that's great though. I like that they all can, but I love the sort of contrast between Hitchcock and Agatha Christie. I mean, it's really interesting. There's some overlap there though too.
A lot of people think that they're totally, totally different, but I see them. I know they're very, very different, like writers and creatives. But they both gripped people with their stories and with the thriller kind of the classic kind of thriller element. I see. They just knew how to grip an audience. They knew how to come up with stuff that you'd never expect. You were constantly on a roller coaster with them. So I think they were quite similar in that way.
No, completely, completely. The next part of my quickfire questions is, if you could have written any play, film, or TV show from history, what would it be? You can just give me one for this, don't worry. You can give me all three if you want, but that's a hell of a question, so don't worry. So you could have been the one to write it, like one that currently exists.
Oh my gosh, that's really, really difficult. Maybe something like Dial M for Murder or And Then There Were None, which is like, maybe something like that. I really also was like a really massive fan of Midnight Mass. Like Mike Flanagan's like Midnight Mass, I thought was amazing. So I'd have been very happy if I could have written that.
No, I mean, I put you on the spot with that one, so I know how hard you'll be
Yeah.
thinking about this for the next few days, and be like, oh, I should have said this, or but no,
I'll
that
be
was
kicking
really
myself
no,
that
it's a
I
good you got some
didn't
good
say someone else. Yeah.
you got some good answers. It's fine, you're doing well. The other one is like, so this one might be easier because it might just be from memory, but what was the last film or TV series or play you saw that had a big impact on you?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I've been in such like a bubble for so long that I haven't been able to really like watch stuff. I've literally just been watching like old comedy things on repeat just when I get back. I watched Saltburn the other week because everyone was talking about it in the cast and Ricky was talking about it. So I watched that, and yeah, that was definitely an experience. I
It's a
don't
divisive one, isn't it?
It really is. I've been talking about it with Ricky today, our director, and he kind of explained it in a way where I was like, okay, right, I get it now. But I thought it was like interesting, but there were just some moments where I was like, whoa. So it definitely got me thinking, and it definitely got me talking with people about it. So I think that's a really great thing. If people are talking about your work,
Yeah, you've done something right, probably, right? Yeah.
definitely. So yeah.
That's sort of my take on that one. I don't love it, but it's definitely got people talking, so it's done something which
You know what I
I
mean?
can't put my finger on it. So yeah, it's an
Yeah, there was
interesting
just some
one.
moments I'm like, I can't believe that happened. But like, it was really the moments. There were moments when, that got the whole world talking. I mean, Murder on the Dance Floor is it like number one?
It was already a bop before, but it's back in the zeitgeist again. There you go.
I don't know how I haven't been listening to that song on repeat for years, but yeah.
Yeah. And last of the quick fires is just, is there any new work out right now that you'd like to shine a light on that apart from your own?
I think that another play that's out is another Emerson and Moore production called Bytopia. And I was lucky enough to see it in its, and it's also directed by Ricky. And I was lucky enough to see it in Manchester. I think I saw one of their first run-throughs, and I thought it was really brilliant then. And it's just getting so much love on like Twitter and stuff, and it's getting great reviews. And I just think it's a really great show. It's a one-person show, and yeah, I just think it's brilliant. It's about kind of realizing that you're bisexual, but coming from a background that is very kind of military and army. And he kind of tells the story of working out his sexuality through kind of like an army perspective. I know I'm really not selling it right, but it's just a really great show. And I think it's going to come on tour again. So if you get to catch it, I definitely would.
No, it's an interesting. Thank you for shining a light on some other new writing as well. It's good to for people to hear about.
Just get a real job.
I've just got two more questions before we I'll let you go and rest because I know you had a busy day. Obviously, the name of the podcast is Just Get a Real Job. We'd all had jobs, we'd had to work to support ourselves over the years. But what's the most memorable part-time slash real job you'd ever had to work? And it can be memorable in a good or a bad way.
Geez, they're mostly rememberable in a bad way, to be honest.
I think that's most
I
common.
worked in, I know, it just not great. I worked in a restaurant, I think, in London, and it was just a really negative, bad experience from start to finish. I ended up just quitting because I just wasn't getting on really with the manager, and he was really nice one moment and then not very nice the next. And yeah, so that was an experience, and I just didn't really fit, I don't think. And then this customer was really rude to me, and it was really upsetting. So I just kind of thought I'm gonna step away from that. But there have definitely been a few memorable part-time kind of jobs that I have been very, very happy to leave.
The one good thing about sort of people being horrible to you when you're a writer, you can like one day you can get back at them in your work.
Yeah.
You get your revenge.
I definitely write about experiences for sure. So it may come up in a piece of writing one day. I don't know. I obviously with like names changed and like a different kind of setting. But yeah, probably.
But you
I'm
will know.
thinking about
But
it.
you will know, and that's all that
Which will be
matters.
fine. I'll kind of that will be my little bit of revenge. I'll be like, well, I know it's about you and how you treated me. So
Well, firstly, as well, Josie, thank you very much for your time today. Much appreciated. But just
yeah.
my closing question for you is
No
just
worries.
what your closing advice would be to anyone that want to sort of become a writer or an actor or do what you do for a living, etc.
I think I mentioned like being self-motivated for sure, and also just being aware of kind of what's going on around you, sending that email that we discussed, and trying to keep your passion for what you do. I find it really easy to just get blocked and in my head with something and just sit staring at a screen for however long. But like going away, coming back to it, I think it's always good giving yourself some breaks and giving yourself a break. You don't have to, you're not gonna write something great first time. You're gonna need to edit things. You're gonna need to go back. You're gonna need to get people to read it. I feel like creative people can be very self-deprecating, and sometimes you just need to, something that my mum says, take a look at the view from the bridge or something. I've killed that, but she always says like to go on the balcony and have a look at what you've done and what you've achieved. So sometimes you just need to take a step back and really kind of appreciate how hard you've worked.
No, it's really interesting and I think really good place to end on. But no, I really appreciate your time. Thank you very much, Josie, and I hope the tour with Rotten goes well.
Thank you.
Best of luck.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks very
Cool.
much.
Well, there you go. That was episode 132 with Josie White. Thank you again for listening. I hope you enjoyed that conversation. Thank you again to Josie for her time. Be sure to check out Rotten. There's links to that in the show notes if you're interested in getting tickets. As always, if you're enjoying this podcast, we make this with little money behind us. And, it's a fully independent podcast. So we have a Patreon. If you're interested in donating to that, you can give us as little as £2 a month. We also, any sort of, just any word of mouth is really, really helpful. So if you think you know someone that might enjoy this podcast that's working in the creative industries or is just interested in this sort of thing, be sure to share it with them. Be sure to give it a wee repost on Twitter or X or whatever it's called these days, or shares on Instagram, etc. You can also find us on Instagram at Just Get a Real Job and on X at Just Get a Real Job. It feels so strange calling Twitter X. Thank you as always to Amy Dinsdale, who does the artwork for this podcast, and to Elliot Mitchell, who edits this podcast. And we hope you have a brilliant end to the week. We'll be back again next week for another episode of Just Get a Real Job. Farewell.
Just get a real job.